Blog Talk Radio.
Absolutely. Oh, man. What do you think now? What do you think now? I don't know. Anyway, good to be with you on a Friday night for a change. That's odd. We even have once upon a time in the old-timey days, you know, is when we did the show. It was on Friday night, 7 to 9. And tonight, I had... Oh, gosh, what in the world's going on here, man? Okay, yeah, turn off a few things here. Back in the old-timey days, yeah, that's what I was talking about. Once upon a time, this show was done for many years on a Friday night, about 3 or 4 years ago. We did it on a Friday night from 7 to 9, and then we changed. I'm not really sure what happened, but we did. We changed. And then we started doing 2 hours on Thursday. I mean, 2 hours on Tuesday night and an hour on Thursday. I had to kind of change things up. I think Mark was with me back in those days too. He might have been on a Friday night as well, and then we moved it. But anyway, no matter where we are in that whole stupid days of the week thing, it's good to be here with you. And yeah, it is a Friday night, and man, it's a mess. Let's go ahead and tell you straight up, it's a freaking ass mess out there, dude. Earlier this week, the Bidens, man, we're gonna dog out. I'm gonna rag ass on the Bidens here for a while. The whole gang, they all suck. a couple different things happened with the Bidens this week. Now, what I would like to refer you to as a source, and if you got Amazon and you got a Kindle, it might even be free, but it's called Secret Empires. And basically in this book, it's by Pete Schweitzer, who is the executive chairman of, what is it? Pete Schweitzer and the Government Accountability Organization. Government Accountability Organization and their watchdog group. And he compiled a book on the Bidens and the McConnells and so many others. Yeah, the boxer, I think Pelosi is in there. But everybody, and we have all for a long time, thought about the Clinton criminal enterprise as you know, the most audacious, the boldest, the most in-your-face, the most successful. Because after Bill left the White House and they got Hillary in the Senate seat and then later as Secretary of State, man, the pay-to-play was through the roof with those guys. And Peter Schweitzer also wrote the book Clinton Cash Incorporated, which talks about everything that they did. Let me see if I can find that here. But it's all open source stuff. It's not anonymous sources. It's not any of that, Everything is open source. It's all there. It can all be backed up. There are no questions. It's a done deal. And these sons of bitches are crooks, man. I don't know how else to say it, but they are. And, you know, people have been highlighting the Bidens, you know, ever since Joe decided to run. And then this unbelievable embarrassment, Hunter, the crack-smoking stripper baby and baby daddy and banging his brother's widow and drug-smoking Burisma bribe-taking clown. And I'm not making this up. I am not. I swear to God, I'm not making this up. Hunter Biden, okay? Naval Academy dropout because he was smoking crack. Crack-smoking Naval Academy dropout. A stripper baby daddy. Point man for the Biden pay-for-play scam. Burisma. Bohai Harvest. In China, who knows how many companies all across Asia and Far Eastern Europe is going to be teaching a class. No, he's going to be teaching a class. He's going to be teaching a college class on public policy at Tulane University, Louisiana this fall. The course titled Media Polarization and Public Policy Impacts will include several guest speakers throughout its 10 weeks, including the president's son. The course description, according to a copy of the syllabus obtained by the Daily Mail, says America's rapidly advancing partisan divide is fueled substantially by the growing political polarization increasingly evident in our news media. This course will explore the current state of the media landscape in the United States and how media polarization, fake news, and the economics of the news business impact public policymaking in Washington, D.C. Think of this as a contribution to Hunter Biden's redemption tour. Completely unjustified and unqualified one, but Hunter is the son of the guy in the White House, and Tulane would be happy to wet its beak. As Tulane notes, it's got four alumni in the new administration, including Rick Levine. Rick Levine, if you'll remember, is the guy who says he's a girl. And goes by the name of Rachel Levine and is the Deputy Secretary for Health and Human Services. Rick Levine is big, 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 big on giving hormonal cessation drugs to kids. Kids. And when I say kids, I mean under 10. Hormone blockers so they can change their sex, because 8-year-olds know whether or not they need to be a boy or a girl. And Rachel Rick Levine understands this and is an ardent. And no, I'm not making it up, man. I'm not making it up. That's the guy. That's the guy right there. He'll spend some time at Tulane. He'll get treated like a VIP. And good stuff happens. Because Tulane and what they do for Hunter Biden will be seen by Joe Biden and it will be remembered. Hunter Biden teaching a college class on public policy. Not dead air. Just getting a drink. Speaking of Biden, in the headlines today, earlier this week, a confused elderly dictator delivered a rambling speech demanding money. Joe finally got around to delivering his State of the Union address, and it was almost as much worth the wait as the Oscars. Sometimes the pills work, sometimes they don't. And they really didn't work this time around. The same identity politic the same identity politics theatrics were there at Biden's speech, just as they were at the Oscars. And just as at the Oscars, the man of the hour turned out to be an elderly man who wasn't there, except Anthony Hopkins wasn't there physically. Joe Biden isn't there mentally. And instead, America's got something closer to Biden unfiltered. Squinting in bafflement, turning his head from side to side like a wind-up doll, and delivering a long and tedious series of demands for money. Empty promises and even more hollow talking points. It was empty. The set was empty. And so many empty seats only highlighted the utter emptiness of his administration. The demands for money have gone from billions to trillions. The promises are even more ridiculous and astronomical. But the figure at the center of it all could barely sell ice on a hot summer day to a man dying of thirst. Even in his basement, Biden performed better than this. Maybe it was the big stage. Maybe it was the people. Maybe he didn't nap hard enough. Or maybe it's hard to sell nothing, and nothing is all that Biden has. The State of the Union is supposed to be more than a confused elderly dictator demanding more money and power. Past presidents lay out their accomplishments. Biden has to keep claiming credit for the vaccine he has nothing to do with, and that's where it ends. The speech, as it was written, wasn't necessarily horrible. It was just mediocre. The laborious History Channel metaphors, America's back. Is it really? He looked tired. He looked incapable of mustering the energy to even deliver his overly scripted lines. He was looking from side to side as if chasing camera one and camera two and squinting to show sincerity, which in reality only conveyed cluelessness. If this was their big push, if this was the big effort to show us Joe Biden as functional, they would have been better off keeping this guy in the basement. I think probably it's overly optimistic of me to say this. And our pal Gary Binford from United Patriots Uprising, I think coming on this Monday, as a matter of fact. Gary is, when his guests come on, and pardon me, I think I better hit the mute button. And we're back. The hell were we talking about? So many people, I really do think this, and I'm talking about on the Democrat side, and I'm not talking about, the Bernie people, the Warren people, the extreme left-wing people, but whatever's left of the center-left. I think that what they were looking for somehow, some way, was the un-Trump, the non-Trump, the not a Trump. And there were a lot of people out there that had that going for him. Joe Biden, really, I mean, that's about all he had going for himself, is he wasn't Donald Trump. And there were a lot of people that, you know, said, okay. They did not realize, and they sold this guy as a moderate. They sold him as being middle of the road and establishment Democrat, but he's not. He's one of the most radical left-wing cats out there. This guy's Jimmy Carter. This is Barack Obama, you know, 3.0. Basically, I'm just wondering. They pulled it off. I don't know how the hell they did it, but they pulled it off. They managed to keep him, even in spite of all the gaffes that he made. And you know, I got no shortage of those that we could play. And I'm not going to get into it right now because we've heard them all, and we'll hear them again at some point. But there has to be, I think, at some point, a massive, massive dose of buyer's remorse when it comes to these people who did not expect Joe Biden to do what he's doing. And you know, the press is going to be duplicitous as well as complicitous. They're going to help. They're in it now, up to their necks. And they don't have any choice, win, lose, or draw. They got to back this guy. They got to make him look, they got to sell him as normal. They got to sell him as with it. They got to sell him as together. They got to sell him as not senile. They have to sell him as not a doddering old fool. And, you know, with the cognitive enhancing cocktail that he's on, yes, this is going to work for a while. It's going to work for a while. But at some point, like all drugs or chemical compounds, you're going to have a lot of things happening at the same time. You're going to have Joe building up a tolerance to these cognitive enhancing drugs that he's undoubtedly taking. Hell, he's got to. He just has to. And of course, you know, the tolerance for these drugs means you're going to have to increase the dose. I don't know where that stops. I don't know at what point they go, ah, we can't do anything else. We can't do anything more with them. We're just going to have to look for good days and bad days. And, you know, they can turn on a dime. Now, in addition to the tolerance to these drugs, you're going to have a continuing cognitive decline. It's going to degrade. You may be slowing down this process, but you're not stopping it. You're not arresting it. You're not reversing it. You are retarding it. And at some point, the cognitive degradation is going to outstrip the therapeutic value of the medication. I mean, it's just going to happen.
It's just going to happen.
And then what? Well, there'll be an announcement. Maybe they can kind of get, maybe they've pre-recorded one. Just in case. I don't know. But maybe there's a taped announcement, a videotaped announcement, you know, that they're going to play. My fellow Americans, and then he goes off and does his thing or falls asleep. I don't know. But it's, you know, something's going to have to happen. I just can't see him making it through four full years of a first term. I just can't. Nothing they do is working. Nobody wants to talk about it other than say, well, everything's cool down the border. It's not a big problem. It's a huge problem. It's a massive problem. By the way, our pal Mike Cutler is going to be on this coming Tuesday to talk all about it. He's got a couple of articles at frontpagemag.com that we're going to delve into and unpack, and it's going to take the whole 2 hours because you know how our man Mike is. He's going to get it done. So this Tuesday on ACP, our friend Mr. Michael Cutler is going to be back with us. Race relations in this country have not improved. They have been worsened in the last 12 years. And it's not because Republicans, people. It's not because of me or you. It wasn't because of Donald Trump. It wasn't because of MAGA people. You know this. Every major city, every major enclave where you've got this kind of racial violence and destruction and hatred, Democrat control. Democrat control. Boston. Maryland, I mean Baltimore, Chicago, Philly, Los Angeles, Atlanta, Colorado, Portland, Seattle. And what has to happen? What has to happen? Well, you know what's got to happen. I mean, and will it? That's the bigger question. I've always remained confident to a large measure that it would, that at one point the worm would turn. Sometimes, though, you know, I'm just not so sure. I am just not so sure.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys the nickel's
right.
worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers
keep
stuck.
This was 1976.
Punks are running wild in the street, and there's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe, and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value. So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
We got to get there, guys. We got to get there. The name of the movie is Network, starring Peter Finch, Ned Beatty, William Holden, Faye Dunaway. A fantastic picture. Script was written by Patty Chayefsky, Comedy Song. That doesn't make a deal. But anyway, it's a great movie, and this is that's a scene from that movie. And 1976, guys. 44 years ago, 45 years ago. Nothing has changed. And nothing will change until we do just exactly what our friend Howard Beale, the anchorman from that movie, played by Peter Finch, tells us to do. Okay? Nothing's changed. We are human beings, God damn it. Our life does have value. Yours, mine, everyone's. And we have to get mad as hell. We can't take it anymore. I'm not talking about violence. I'm not talking about fomenting violence. Of course, there's going to be some. I do believe while I'm not advocating it, I can see it very clearly. It has, you know, it started when Donald Trump was elected, you know, the Antifa types and BLM types beating up on Trump supporters, you know, elderly men and women, kids, because they're badasses, these guys. And there's going to be more violence. And it's going to be a fearful thing. I don't know how much. I don't know how far it's going to go. I really don't. But we're living in a frightening time. Tomorrow's May the 1st. BLM is a Marxist organization. Antifa. Marxist organization. Tomorrow's May 1st. Be careful wherever you go. If you're listening, by the way, thank you for listening. No matter where you are. But if you're listening to some of these Democrat enclaves that we've talked about, for the love of God, be careful. And you know what? If you got one, maybe take it with you if you have to go out, or keep it close. And God forbid you ever have to use it. Well, I'll tell you what, we're down at the bottom of the hour, and I think what we'll do is we're going to go ahead and play a little music. That's what we're going to do. We're going to play a little music because, quite frankly, all this talking makes a man thirsty, and I've got to get something else to drink. You're listening to a conservative's perspective here on the Patriot Nation Radio Network on, or here at Patriot Nation Radio on Blog Talk Radio. We do it live ordinarily Tuesdays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. Tuesdays, it's 2 hours, seven to nine. Thursdays, it's 7 to 8, and then, of course, 8 to 9, El Guapo, the handsome one himself, who's going to be calling in tonight around 9 o'clock with a COVID story. Pretty scary thing happened to him and his family. No one with any brains has ever minimized the threat that COVID-19 plays to those who have that right combination of comorbidities. No one, myself, nobody. Just like any other coronavirus can be deadly to folks with the right comorbidities. And Mark's going to be calling in about 9 o'clock to talk about that. Let me see, what in the world? Got a lot of Rand Paul clips, too. Here we go. We will be back. We'll be back with more of a conservative's perspective right after this. Hey. I love those big 60s kind of, those big heart feels songs, stuff like that. I love it. Well, welcome back. It's a conservative perspective here on Patriot Nation Radio at Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com. That's really all I have to say about that. Ordinarily, we do it live twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Tonight, we're on at 8 because I just decided to do something a little different, man. Used to be we were here back in the old-timey days at 8 o'clock and 7, rather. I don't know. Anyway, we did the show on Friday nights and just felt a little nostalgic for us and decided to do one tonight. And it's been pretty cool so far. Biden's speech was a snooze fest, as it, you know. And everybody knows it was a snooze fest. I mean, you know, but there are people out there that don't know that they know it. And that's, and I know what that sounds like, but they don't. They think it. It's what they think. They go, well, man, this speech really isn't good. But Chris Wallace tells me it's the greatest thing since the Emancipation Proclamation or the Gettysburg Address. So I love it. And again, you know, the speech is a snoozer, but the people in the press, those cats, as I said, they're invested. They're going to make it look good. They're going to make him look good. They're going to do anything. They're going to say anything. And the group over at on Fox News at the 5 have a few thoughts on this. I'm going to go ahead and sit. Yeah, there it is. And then what they're talking about here is they're basically slamming, and rightfully so, the sycophantic media that thinks this dude's the greatest orator since William Jennings Bryan, for God's sake.
Welcome back. The media giving a big thumbs up to President Biden's speech.
After 4 years of a monotone shout, it was bracing to hear a speech delivered at times by a whisper.
I thought it was a remarkable
speech.
He's really trying to bring the country together. It was a make America feel good night, make America feel pride night.
I thought the speech was very carefully and very smartly crafted in a political way.
Oh, my God.
But the media had a much harsher take on Senator Tim Scott's GOP rebuttal.
This is a speech delivered from a planet where facts don't matter, which is where the current Republican Party resides.
I'm not sure what the purpose of this was. I am shocked and a bit embarrassed for him. This was a lost opportunity.
He does not seem to understand, and a lot of them don't seem to understand, the difference between a racist country and a systemic and systemic racism. They don't seem to get the difference.
My God.
So Dana, let's go back to Tim Scott's speech, and I want to ask you if you think it's going to elevate him. I remember with Fred Thompson a way back, it really put Fred Thompson on the map as a presidential candidate. It did not do that for Marco Rubio or Bobby Jindal. What do you think it does for Tim Scott?
Again, I really think that, you know, doing the rebuttal is very, very hard, and I think only somebody with oratory skills. Help me, Greg. I think
oratory.
I can't remember. He has good oratory.
You don't
oratory.
Want help from me. I'll say something terrible.
He speaks real well. That's what I want to say. yes, there's just no doubt. Like, he is now elevated. The fact everybody's talking about him. You know, sometimes, unfortunately, trending negatively on Twitter with a racial slur will elevate you to where people, like, for example, Kamala Harris was asked about his very comments last night by Robin Roberts this morning on Good Morning America. Tim Scott said it's not a racist country. What do you think? She said, I agree. It is not a racist country, but we have issues we have to deal with. And then, as you pointed out, Juan, what is Tim Scott doing? He's not just out giving speeches and raising money. He actually is rolling up his sleeves and working on the legislation. So I think that, yes, it definitely elevates him. It's interesting that the media, somebody in the media had that reaction. If they had been with me last night, first of all, Peter was really annoying me because we could, like beforehand, he was flipping through the channels. We'll talk about the Netflix surfing a little bit. We're dealing with that. Then I'm like, I got to watch the speech. He sat there and read a book, but then was like from the peanut gallery. Let's just say there were some people who did not like the speech.
Well, Greg, I think you didn't like the speech from what I heard earlier. But I wanted to ask you if you could agree that the president did seem to be in command, alert, not some doddering old guy.
Oh my God!
A lot of the conservative complaint. It looked like that got blown away last
night. The president was alert. Let's give him a hand.
Woo! Problem solved. He was conscious. No, I think the real news here is that Joy Reid can be embarrassed. I mean, who knew?
Yeah.
By the way, we had two joys in that montage, and either one, they were both joyless. Look, here's the deal. The media is in charge of the nation's narrative, so generally when they are reviewing something, they're reviewing how well their narrative is effectively spread. So I used to think that the media was the bullhorn for the Democrats. It's actually the opposite. The Democrat Party is the foot soldier for the powerful people in media. They are given the talking points, and they're interchangeable with what you would see on CNN is exactly what you'd see coming from the Democrats. But the difference is it's coming from the media now. It's not coming from the politicians.
So, Jesse, I was struck that Biden made a point of saying that you have mostly good police in this country. And then I saw Maxine Waters applauding. So to me, that looked like a unifying gesture. How did it look to you?
I was happy everybody clapped, but I think Greg just made a good point. And when Greg actually makes a good point, I think we should recognize that. So that was really astute. But Juan, just to what we were saying in the A block, Biden laid such an egg. That might have been the lowest rated State of the Union ever by about 20 million. And you should know that people have been able to stream things for about a decade. So I don't think streaming just started this year. I'm disappointed in Andrea Mitchell and Martha Raddatz and Brian Williams. I'm disappointed, and here's why, Juan. These legends have covered or observed, I don't know, the masterful delivery of Ronald Reagan, Bill Clinton's charismatic stemwinders, George W. Bush's defining language after 9/11, Barack Obama's soaring oratory, Donald Trump's showmanship and intense patriotic language, and they're going to look at Joe Biden's speech and say that was remarkable? Juan, that's like watching a football game with all punts and penalties, and Jim Nance says, that was the greatest game I've ever seen. You'd think Jim Nance is a moron if he told you that. You're saying it was good because he promised to spend more money than anybody ever? Is that the barometer right now? Someone can tax and spend really well? That's easy. There's no creativity. There's no innovation there. He's just buying votes and redistributing the wealth. Anybody can do that. We're supposed to give this guy a big round of applause because he takes our money and gives it away and makes more people dependent? Come on, Juan. This wasn't a great speech. This was bad.
I don't agree, but I'm going to take your point and go to Katie. Katie, let's just forget the pundits then. But the American people in the poll said they liked the speech.
Well, let me see if I can do this correctly. It was the most unifying speech since the Civil War, and everybody who criticized Tim Scott is a raging racist, and they should be canceled. Left's rules, not mine.
There you go.
All right.
What I think surprises me about, and I don't understand why these guys are upset. I don't understand why they're surprised. I don't, you know, this is what they do. Okay, it's news if they tell you it's news. There you go. And for a lot of people, this is what is so troubling. Okay, it's not troubling the fact that you've got corporations, the big corporations out there, telling you what they think is news, or what they want you to think is news. The thing that's troubling here, there are people who believe them when they tell them what they think should be the news. This is the news you need. And they say, I need this. All right. I guess sometimes, and I've always been kind of pessimistic in a way, there's always been this nagging pessimism about this for the short term. And what I mean by for the short term is, you know, over the next 20, 30 years, hopefully not any longer than that. But, you know, there's been just such a tremendous dumbing down in America on a lot of levels. I'm in the school business, people. I see it every day, every day. And I see these guys coming out of college. Yeesh. Again, you know, they're not taught how to think. They're taught what to think. And they think that they've been taught how to think. And that's what these guys want. A bunch of ignoramuses wanting to be smart-oramuses, as my good friend Drover Sea Dog says. And I guess if you haven't watched the speech, and you know what? I mean, yeah, go ahead. I don't want to stop you from it. Don't get me wrong. Go ahead. Check it out. But you're going to see, you know, what you see and what you hear is going to be at stark variance with what the news media tells you about what you saw and what you heard. So I looked around today, I half-heartedly looked around today for Biden highlights on the speech, and it's really not worth it. I think the best thing to do, I have some highlights. Actually, it's almost 10 minutes, and Tim Scott's speech was 15. And it was a barn burner if you got 10 minutes. If a 15-minute speech makes a 10-minute highlight reel, that's some serious speechifying, as we used to say. But let's hear what he had to say. This guy is really smart. He's really articulate. He is, I think, a good and just man. And let's hear what he has to say. By listening to what Tim Scott says in these highlights, you will be able to pretty much, if you didn't watch it, figure out what Joe's up to. Just think the opposite of everything Tim Scott says.
COVID brought Congress together 5 times. This administration pushed us apart. Another issue that should unite us is infrastructure. Republicans support everything you think of when you think of infrastructure. Roads, bridges, ports, airports, waterways, high-speed broadband. We're in for all of that. But again, Democrats want a partisan wish list. They won't even build bridges to build bridges. Less than 6% of the president's plan goes to roads and bridges. It's a liberal wish list of big government waste, plus the biggest job-killing tax hikes in a generation. Experts say when all is said and done, it would lower wages of the average American worker and shrink our economy. Tonight, we also heard about a so-called family plan, even more taxing, even more spending, to put Washington even more in the middle of your life, from the cradle to college. The beauty of the American dream is that families get to define it for themselves. We should be expanding opportunities and options for all families, not throwing money at certain issues because Democrats think they know best. Infrastructure spending that shrinks our economy is not common sense. Weakening our southern borders and creating a crisis is not compassion. Nowhere do we need common ground more desperately than in our discussions of race. I have experienced the pain of discrimination. I know what it feels like to be pulled over for no reason, to be followed around the store while I'm shopping. I remember every morning at the kitchen table, my grandfather would open the newspaper and read it, I thought. But later I realized he had never learned to read it. He just wanted to set the right example. I've also experienced a different kind of intolerance. I get called Uncle Tom and the N-word by progressives, by liberals. Just last week, a national newspaper suggested my family's poverty was actually privilege because a relative owned land generations before my time. Believe me, I know firsthand, our healing is not finished. In 2015, after the shooting of Walter Scott, I wrote a bill to fund body cameras. Last year, after the deaths of Breonna Taylor and George Floyd, I built an even bigger police reform proposal. But my Democratic colleagues blocked it. I extended an olive branch. I offered amendments, but Democrats used a filibuster to block the debate from even happening. My friends across the aisle seemed to want the issue more than they wanted a solution. But I'm still working. I'm hopeful that this will be different. When America comes together, we've made tremendous progress, but powerful forces want to pull us apart. 100 years ago, kids in classrooms were taught the color of their skin was their most important characteristic. And if they looked a certain way, they were inferior. Today, kids are being taught that the color of their skin defines them again. And if they look a certain way, they're an oppressor. From colleges to corporations to our culture, people are making money and gaining power by pretending we haven't made any progress at all, by doubling down on the divisions we've worked so hard to heal. You know this stuff is wrong. Hear me clearly. America is not a racist country. It's backwards to fight discrimination with different types of discrimination, and it's wrong to try to use our painful past to dishonestly shut down debates in the present. Anxious. A nation with so much cause for hope should not feel so heavy laden. A president who promised to bring us together should not be pushing agendas that tear us apart. The American family deserves better, and we know what better looks like. Just before COVID, we had the most inclusive economy in my lifetime, the lowest unemployment rate ever recorded for African Americans, Hispanics, and Asians, and a 70-year low nearly for women. Wages were growing faster at the bottom than at the top. The bottom 25% saw their wages go up faster than the top 25%. That happened because Republicans focused on expanding opportunity for all Americans. In addition to that, we passed opportunity zones, criminal justice reform, and permanent funding for historically black colleges and universities for the first time ever. We fought the drug epidemic, rebuilt our military, and cut taxes for working families and single moms like the one that raised me. Our best future will not come from Washington schemes or socialist dreams. It will come from you, the American people, black, Hispanic, white, and Asian, Republican and Democrat, brave police officers in black neighborhoods. We are not adversaries. We are family. We are all in this together, and we get to live in the greatest country on earth, the country where my grandfather in his 94 years saw his family go from cotton to Congress in one lifetime. So I am more than hopeful. I am confident that our finest hour is yet to come. Original sin is never the end of the story, not in our souls and not for our nation. The real story is always redemption. I am standing here because my mom has prayed me through some really tough times. I believe our nation has succeeded the same way because generations of Americans in their own ways have asked for grace and God has supplied it. So I will close with a word from a worship song that really helped me through this past year of COVID. The music is new, but the words draw from Scripture. May the Lord bless you and keep you, make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. May his presence go before you and behind you and beside you. In your weeping and your rejoicing, he is for you. May his favor be upon our nation for 1,000 generations, and your family and your children and their children. Good night, and God bless the United States of America. I'm an African American who's voted in the South my entire life. I take voting rights personally. Republicans support making it easier to vote and harder to cheat, and so do the voters. Big majorities of Americans support early voting, and big majorities support voter ID, including African Americans and Hispanics. Common sense makes common ground. But today, this conversation has collapsed. The state of Georgia passed a law that expands early voting, preserves no-excuse mail-in voting, and despite what the president claimed, did not reduce election day hours. If you actually read this law, it's mainstream. It will be easier to vote early in Georgia than in Democrat-run New York. But the left doesn't want you to know that. They want people virtue signaling by yelling about a law they haven't even read. Fact checkers have called out the White House for misstatements. The president absurdly claims that this is worse than Jim Crow. What is going on here? I'll tell you, a Washington power grab. This misplaced outrage is supposed to justify Democrats' new sweeping bill that would take over elections for all 50 states. It would send public funds to political campaigns you disagree with and make the bipartisan Federal Elections Commission partisan. This is not about civil rights or our racial past. It's about rigging elections in the future. And no, the same filibuster that President Obama and President Biden praised when they were senators, the same filibuster that the Democrats used to kill my police reform bill last year, has not suddenly become a racist relic just because the shoe is now on the other foot. Race is not a political weapon to settle every issue the way one side wants. It's far too important.
Now, usually, when this guy's articulate, all right, and it seems, you know, these speeches go one way or another. This one went one way, and by that I mean better than Biden's. The Democrat response or the Republican response to a State of the Union address is usually tough because the president, Republican or Democrat, laying out, you know, their accomplishments in the State of the Union address is normally how that goes. You know, they lay out their accomplishments. They look at what they want to, you know, their vision for the next year or whatever it's going to be, their plan for their term in the administration. And they talk about how they're going to go about achieving those goals. Not, you know, not the whole Bible, but enough chapters and verses to get everybody on board. And they want to call this a State of the Union speech. And I guess they can. There's nobody stopping them from doing it. But it was empty. He took credit for a vaccine he had absolutely nothing to do with. And as far as everything else goes, it's been fundamentally a cascade of executive orders undoing Trump policies because they were Trump policies. Good, bad, or indifferent. Now, excuse me, overall, you know, living in the vacuum of history, as we are right now, amongst these times. You have to know where to look. Ah, there he is. He's here. You have to know where to look. But I'm going to stop right this. I'm going to stop here right now. Our pal, Mark Hoffman, the handsome one himself, is with us this evening. And as I told you earlier, you know, his family's had a very serious brush with COVID. And again, folks, nobody with any brains whatsoever has minimized the seriousness of this virus. It can be absolutely, totally lethal for people with the right combination of comorbidities, just like any other coronavirus, just like any other flu season. And it can't be. You have to take precautions. You got to be serious about it. And tonight, with his story, is our pal, Mr. Mark Hoffman. We've brought him up. Mark, good to have you here on a Friday night of ACP, and even better to know that your lovely wife is doing fine and your family is coming out of this thing a little bit better every day.
Yes, indeed. Good evening, folks. And I am the host of the Patriot Nation Radio Show. Thanks, James, for having me on. I'll talk a little bit about what's going on with this COVID virus. I still think there's something seriously fishy with this virus.
First things first, though, Bianca's doing much better, right? I mean, she's out of danger,
yeah.
and things are looking good.
Hold on. She's actually calling in. Give me a second. Put me on hold a second. I got to call my wife. She's calling in.
Okay, man. Mark's wife is, Mark and his son, thankfully, didn't have any problems with it. Bianca was another story with some of the health issues that she is fighting right now. Currently, coronavirus is not a good thing to be in her neighborhood, and thank heavens she's back out and doing well. He's talking to her right now. He has a dinner that's on the way, and I bet it's probably got something to do with that. So anyway, back to what we were talking about. as far as the Biden thing goes, you know, it's a joke. They're crooks. It's a joke. I don't know how long they'll be able to keep up the facade. They've done remarkably well to this point. But again, like I said, at some point, the cognitive decline is going to outpace the cognitive drugs. And here he comes back, our man, El Guapo, the handsome one, Mark Hoffman, host of Patriot Nation Radio Live here Thursdays. Good to have you back, bud.
Yes, indeed. Food's about 9 minutes out. So.
Okay, well, then you got a little bit of time to tell your story. I'm going to get out of the way. I want you to tell us your experiences and what were the things, what questions did this bring up to you after you've gone through everything?
All right. Well, first, our church came down with COVID, the whole leadership of the church, and we had gone to an Easter celebration there. And about 8 days later, my wife started having some symptoms. We all went to the same place, me, my wife, and my son. Now, my wife does have many underlying conditions, including two forms of arthritis, rheumatoid psoriatic arthritis, psoriatic and ankylosing spondylosis, which is a degenerative spine, autoimmune disease, and inflammatory disease, just to name a few. Thing really hit her hard. And what I've learned is that the reason that people with comorbidities are dying from this is because the COVID-19, SARS, whatever you want to call it, attacks your ailments. So if you have a bad heart, it goes after your heart. If you have bad kidneys, it goes after your kidneys. If you got autoimmune disease, guess what? And so that's why people are dying from this stuff with comorbidities, because it enhances them. My wife's arthritis was so bad that for 5 days, she was 6 days, 8 days, many days, she was in bed. I had to cancel shows. I had to put the show on hold here for a little while as we battled through this. And it was so bad. Now, before she went into the hospital the first time, I laid in bed with her every night. I rubbed Bengay on her sore joints and muscles, got her medicine, fed her, helped her eat, helped her to the bathroom, whatever I needed to do. And I never caught the sickness. Granted, she wasn't coughing, she wasn't sneezing, she wasn't hacking. She had a severe arthritis pain and 103 fever. And that's it. So she goes to the hospital Friday because she starts vomiting. The hospital gets her under control, sends her home. 2 days later, she feels like someone's sitting on her chest, and she has massive leg cramps. By this time, she was in bed pretty much for 10 days or 11 days, where she could only get up to go to the bathroom barely. Not moving around. So the doctor said, you got to go back to the hospital because I believe you have a blood clot in that leg because you've been laying around for so many days.
Holy cow.
And then she tells the doctor, I feel like someone's sitting on my chest. Well, you make sure to give you another chest x-ray. So they went and they did a CAT scan and a chest x-ray. No blood clots, but she now has double bilateral pneumonia. Still no coughing, no hacking, just severe pain and a fever. And now, of course, a little vomiting. And, so she goes back to the hospital, and they're like, holy crap. So they admitted her again. And this time they got to the bottom of it. They got it all under control. They gave her some antibiotics. They gave her some steroids. They gave her some breathing treatments. And then the fever broke. And a few days later, 3 days later, 4 days later, she came out of the hospital and has been steadily improving in a fast pace ever since. Although something that they gave her in the hospital gave her severe other issues, out the other end. So she was vomiting and other things. And so, but the discomfort from all the, throwing up gave her a sore throat. It, coming out the other end, you know what that does. And she's just been unbelievably one discomfort after another. But the last 3 days, thanks to prayers and concerns and well wishes from friends and family across the globe, because, the show has got us global, she's recovering and kicking ass right now and really doing good. No pain, no fever, no cough, nobody sitting on a chest. Everything is like, pretty much just a little trace of pneumonia and it's going away, the steroids and the antibiotics and everything like that. Now, she can't get the, regular treatments for these diseases because of all the things that she has and the medication that she's on interacts with all the other medicines. So she suffered double because she couldn't get the medicine to fight it. They gave her some antibiotics. That's all they could do. So it was really rough. And it's really strange because, like I said, I was hands-on caregiver and I never got sick. I never even got, I took two tests. They both came back negative. And there's something strange about this sickness. I don't know what it is, but I should be dying of the COVID, choking, hacking, something. I got nothing. My son nothing. They're in this house.
And that's remarkable to me because, Mark, here's the thing, working in the school business in high school, which, in West Virginia, the high schools took a beating. But fundamentally, long story short, 14, 15 months, COVID's been around. I've been walking amongst it. I haven't worn a mask. I've been exposed. I've been ordered into quarantine a couple of different times. I've never had so much as a runny nose because of it. And I don't fully understand it either. But yet, at the same time, you look at somebody like Bianca who suffered. And I know she had it tough with what you just told me here, man. I'm just thinking that's got to be terrible. And I don't understand it myself. And you being right there.
Yeah, never wore a mask.
It's strange.
Never. I never wore a mask. I did all her treatments, hands on, no gloves, no mask, no sickness. There's something very weird, strange, and odd about it. Just give me 1 second.
Go right ahead.
Thank you. All right, that's my dinner just arrived.
Well,
and I don't want to get
me. Okay, then I don't want to keep you from it.
No,
going to be?
I got time.
All right.
I got 2 more minutes, 3 more minutes. Thank you. We've been waiting this long. I can wait a couple more minutes. So I don't know if
now,
you want to ask me anything that I thought was going on, but you could shoot fire.
What was the when Bianca was in the when she was in the hospital? What were your number one? Were you allowed to go in? Number two? What were your impressions? I mean, was the hospital overrun with COVID patients? Was it a panic?
No.
What was – okay, let's talk about that.
They all kept saying, I can't believe you got it this bad. This is the end of COVID. COVID is done. This is the end of stage three. They all kept saying that. And they let me back in the emergency room. I was back there with them. They said, if you leave the emergency room, you can't come back. And I had my son with me. So I'm like, well, I got to go out there with my son. Sweetheart, I love you. You know, I'll see you in a little bit. And I went out with my son, and then we had to leave. They wouldn't let us back in after that. But there was no overrun hospital. The first hospital was, like, scared to death that she was even there, and they rushed her out. It's like they rushed her out the door. Get out. We don't want you in here, you know? Like, it was really – the doctor wouldn't go in the room. The nurses were, like, scared to death. It was the weirdest thing that was happening in the first hospital. The second hospital, they were like, oh, my God. The nurses would, like, talk with their masks down. They were hanging out with no gloves. It was, like, totally different. They very lackadaisical were the nurses and the doctors at the second hospital. Like, it wasn't going to affect them. They weren't scared. They came on. One lady even sat on, one of the nurses sat on the edge of the bed and hit it off with my wife. They exchanged phone numbers. They were talking and laughing, for, you know, carrying on. And so one hospital was scared to death. The other hospital was like, woo-hoo, it's a party. Let's have some fun, you know. So I don't understand. It's very odd. Very odd what's going on. The treatment, the attitude of the people. Some people, I guess, bought into the fear campaign, and some people didn't. I don't know.
Well, you know, one of the things you talked about, and I know you got to get ready to go, but when you mentioned this, and I have not heard this before, was that with this particular coronavirus, with the COVID-19, that it attacks the body based on the ailments that the you know, the body's suffering through. And, you know, you stop and think about this, and if we make the connection to the level 4 bioweapons laboratory in Wuhan province in China, that would make an awesome weapon, wouldn't it? Because it's going to your own individual ailments to kill you.
Right. And if you notice, the people that get sick, almost all those people have some underlying ailment. Almost everybody, young and old.
I
don't know. Somehow they figured out how to give this thing a mind of its own that will attack your weaknesses individually on an individual basis. I apparently have this super strong immune system. I eat fruit. I eat yogurt. I drink water. I exercise. I do all this stuff. I'm in great shape. I'm in my mid-50s, and I'm in the best shape of my life. And so maybe that has something to do with it. I ate elderberry with zinc, vitamin C, and vitamin
D.
Right,
we talked about that, yeah.
That really helped. Soon as the church said that they were doing it and my wife started getting sick, I went and I started eating that stuff. And I never got nothing. I never got sick. Like I said, I was hands-on in her face. First 5 days, I was kissing her on the cheek and rubbing her head and trying to comfort her and doing all the things that a husband does for their lovely wife. And I never got it. That's what I don't get. If it's so damn contagious that it's in the droplets when you sneeze, how come, I got a ceiling fan in my room spinning 100 miles an hour with a sick person in the room. I never got sick. Makes no sense. I don't want to get sick. I don't want this. I don't want to go through it. It's just
absolutely
odd. And there's some kind of weird characteristics with this disease, and it definitely acts like it's a man-made, like some kind of crazy thing. And
yeah, I mean, that would make a very effective weapon.
Yeah. Now the vaccine,
to have that kind of a diversibility. What's that?
And I'm hearing with these vaccines that these proteins are coming off of people's skin that have the vaccines and are getting healthy people that haven't got vaccinated sick. So keep an eye on this. This is coming out now. Of course, it's not in the mainstream media, like the dangers of the Pfizer vaccine that's killed over 2,500 people, 50,000 people with adverse effects and miscarriages and Bell's palsy. This is just one. This is Pfizer. Johnson & Johnson, of course, they thought were causing blood clots. There are a lot of side effects with these vaccines, and people really have to think and consider before they get these vaccines. It's better to get the sickness, get it out of your system, and screw that vaccine. I'm never getting it. I'm not getting it. My wife's like talking like she wants to get it. I've been trying so hard to convince her that she don't need to get it now that she's had it. But she's like, I
exactly,
get it.
Because now she's immunized.
Right.
I'm convinced.
She went into the hospital. I'm not getting no vaccine. She comes out of the hospital. We're all getting the vaccine because 24 hours a day when you're in the hospital 24 hours a day on the COVID wing, they got the propaganda going through the sound system the whole time while you're in there, sleeping, awake. COVID-19, wash your hands, wear your mask, get the vaccine, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. All day long, 24/7, comes over the sound system. So she comes out, we're getting a vaccine, you got to wear your mask. So what I did is I put the mask on, and I took a big drag of a friend's cigarette, because I don't smoke or nothing like that, but just to prove a point, I took a quick hit, put the mask on, tight as I could on my face, and blew the smoke out. And it came through the mask, around the mask, a three-ply mask, a paper one that everyone's wearing.
It's useless.
It blew through the mask, around the mask, over the mask, and my wife's eyes popped out of her head. I said, the mask don't work. I ain't wearing it. As soon as you're healthy, the mask off. That's it.
And she doesn't need to. That's the point. Because now I'm convinced that back when this whole thing started, somewhere between Thanksgiving and Christmas, the year before last, I got what I thought was my seasonal cold, and that's what I got. I got the COVID. I was immunized because I had it. And it hadn't been a problem since.
Yeah, I think that's what I had it too. I think we all had it then, before it was a big pandemic in America. I think it got here in the late summer, early fall. And,
right.
Because my father-in-law and mother-in-law went to Germany to visit family. And when they came home, my father-in-law got really sick. They put him in the hospital. They said, well, it looks like pneumonia. It acts like pneumonia, but it's different. We don't know what it is. And that was in the fall, right before the big outbreak. And he did 5 days in the hospital, and then he went home. And I think he had it. I think we all had it because we were all in that room together, and we all got sick all around the same time. Everybody got little colds, little fevers, little coughs. And then it went away, and then all of a sudden we're in a pandemic. So who knows? It's very odd and very strange. And so, but this brings me to my time where I have to go get dinner. But I want to talk a little bit quick, if I can, about Patriot Nation Radio in the next show.
Go right ahead.
It's not going to be this Thursday, but I have we have a gentleman here in Florida who went down to the border, and he really did some great reporting. And I'm going to have him and a couple of Angel families on talking about because Marianne Mendoza went down to the border, and Laura Irish Wilkerson went down to the border. Their children have been killed by illegal aliens. I'm going to get them on the show with us with this guy who went down to the border, and he did like the whole Texas border from one end to the other, all different towns, all different areas, and he's got some information. And we're going to do that 2 weeks from yesterday. So I don't know what that date is. That should be the date. And we're going to have a great show because that border is just unbelievable right now. And guess what? Right before the crisis started at the border, the administration that's currently residing in the White House starts warning about the third wave. Get ready. We're going to have a really bad third wave. I'm like, no crap, because you're importing it from the border, letting these people go free in town. We'll be talking about that too.
Well, Tuesday's show, if you haven't heard, our pal Mike Cutler is going to be with me, and it's going to be a whirlwind. I don't think there's anybody who is more of an authority on the immigration system and how it works. So we're going to be tying all this stuff up. And you're right. They're hemorrhaging at the border. It's part of the plan. Mike Cutler says all the time, you know, we think that the immigration system is broken. No, it's functioning flawlessly for the people that want it to work this way. And I guess the last question I have, number one, one of the things I've always admired about your program, Mark, is that you have a flair, just an innate thing that you have that hits on those stories. And human interest stories is kind of cliched, but when you talk to these guys and you get them on and they tell their stories, you do a terrific job in focusing on the humanity of what's going on. And I've always thought that about your program. Number one, I'm glad that Bianca's feeling better. I'm hoping that this thing leaves your house and never comes back again. And the last thing I want to leave you with is, what's for dinner? Yeah. What do you guys have?
Steaks all around. Steaks all around.
Absolutely, baby.
Because we're stuck in the house. Stuck in the house. We have Applebee's curbside delivery.
Outstanding. Get in there and enjoy it before it goes cold, ladies and gentlemen. Our friend, Mr. Mark Hoffman, El Guapo, the handsome one. He's going to be back in a couple of weeks as soon as everything in his household gets squared away and health is restored. God bless you, Mark. Enjoy dinner.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Make sure you keep tuning in to this amazing show, A Conservative's Perspective, Tuesdays and Thursdays. Talk to you soon. Peace, brother.
All right. Take care, Mark.
See ya.
What a great guy. What a great guy. I mean, you know, he's a terrific. And it was a close shave because Bianca, like I said, she has some comorbidities you heard Mark talk about. And I did not know that. that this virus works in that way, and it keys on the individual's individual's ailments and the problems in that individual's system. And again, guys, this came from a level 4 bioweapons laboratory in Wuhan, China. Claire Lopez is scheduled to come back on, and we're gonna refresh everybody's memory on this. This is a weapon. I don't think it was a perfected weapon. I think that they were in the process of still working and tinkering with this thing to get it weaponized. I think that in its final product, it would have probably been considerably more deadly than what we see right now. But according to Claire, and like I said, we're going to get her back on to talk about this, hopefully before I get down there to Rock the Red. But the reason this thing got out was because of poor containment and security protocols. In Wuhan province, we've all heard the stories about the wet markets and the unbelievably disgusting animals that the Chinese peasants eat. Well, unscrupulous Chinese people, you know, the I guess custodians, the maintenance, the containment people with the, you know, the inside the laboratory, they would take the test animals after they've been experimented on or injected with this freaking ass virus, and they sell them to the wet market dealers. The virus spreads in Wuhan. The Chinese government figures out what the hell's going on. And it probably didn't take them long to figure out what was going on, because it didn't take them long to clamp down a travel ban from Wuhan to anywhere else in China. There was no internal air travel from Wuhan to I'm probably pretty sure there was no travel, period, from Wuhan to anywhere within the interior of mainland China. However, you could catch a flight in Wuhan province to anywhere in the world outside of China. Cat's already out of the bag. We may as well go ahead and use the rest of the world as our test lab to see what we need to do to improve. You think the Chinese haven't been taking notes? You think that the medical information that the Chinese are getting in a spirit of cooperation and trying to fight this terrible, terrible virus, you think they're taking, no, they're taking that into account. They're looking at the effectiveness of this virus and what they can conceivably do to improve its efficacy. That's easy for me to say, but I talk for a living. To improve its efficacy. If I'm looking at it on paper, yeah, I think I'd be able to say it better. Efficacy. But Biden's been in bed with the Chinese for decades now. Nothing's going to happen. There aren't going to be any there's not going to be any retribution. There aren't going to be any consequences for the Chi-Coms. Hell, they'll probably not even be convicted in a court of public opinion. They got LeBron James, man. They got the NBA. Speaking of LeBron James, let me find this. You know, LeBron James is a dichotomy of remarkable basketball player, unbelievably stupid man in any other aspect of his life. That was harsh. They say he's a pretty good husband and father. And that's something important. I'm not going to get in the middle of that. Let us change this. He's a remarkable basketball player, but his political astuteness is woefully lacking. And LeBron has been an active proponent and advocate of BLM. Last week, in another police officer-involved shooting of a black of a black citizen, black girl. She was getting ready to kill another girl. She had a knife in her hand, moving towards the girl, getting ready to stab her. Dropped the knife, dropped the knife, dropped the knife, dropped the knife. Nope, not going to drop the knife. I got to shoot you if you don't drop the knife. I'm not kidding. Drop the knife. Doesn't drop the knife. Damn it, I didn't want to shoot you. Kapow! He shoots her and he kills her. It had to be done. He did not want to do this, I promise you. Because I'll bet he has killed that girl every night he's gone to bed since this has happened. He's probably killed her once an hour. He probably hasn't thought about anything else since this has happened. And I guarantee you now, he doesn't want to be thinking about it. He didn't want to do that. It's just what I think. So, in the aftermath of this, LeBron James tweets a picture of the officer that was involved in the shooting with the caption, "You're next." Ouch. Can you imagine what it would be? You're a cop. And this is the thing. This is what I'm talking about. We're at a stage in this country where the court jesters seem to have the greatest influence. And what do I mean by court jesters? Athletes, entertainers, singers, actors, directors, musicians. Okay? These people, America has this bad habit of taking someone who has achieved greatness or notoriety in whatever particular field of endeavor it is, other than medicine, education, statesmanship, citizenship. They don't care about advances in these areas, but you know, you can throw down a song like Wet Behind Kitty Cat. You know, Cardi B was a whore. Okay? Cardi B was a whore who drugged and rolled Johns. And there are people on the left in the Marxist progressive left that would hold her up as a greater icon than, say, Candace Owens. Oh, yeah. So, radio personalities and entertainers and musicians and all these cats, you know, they achieve this notoriety. And then all of a sudden they think, you know, that their skills in acting, their ability to act, in other words, their ability to parrot words written by someone else with the proper corresponding emotions somehow translate into incisive political commentary. And the problem is all the people around them go, "Yo, LeBron, that's awesome, man. That's deep, yo." No, it ain't. It's LeBron. Anyway, we put these people on pedestals, and we look to them not for entertainment, which is all they're good for, maybe some philanthropic work with the money that they make, but beyond that, tell me what LeBron James is good for. Seriously. He could be working in Walmart or Lowe's helping people get stuff off the really, really, the little people help them get stuff off the really, really high shelves. He doesn't do that. He's not thinking about the little people. LeBron don't care about the little people, man. He don't pick them up. LeBron don't care about the little people. Because he says something or he has opinions, as we all do, not necessarily informed opinions, just opinions. And he comes out with these opinions, and there are people that love LeBron James because he's a great basketball player. And they think, therefore, because he's gifted and adept in one field, that that's something that's universal. And I don't believe that it is. And the mature people out there in the world take a look at guys like LeBron and they go, oh, really? Nice. Well, I can't think of the guy's name. He's a police officer who... well, he made LeBron look like the fool that LeBron is rather than... here, I'll just listen to this. This is a video. This is the audio from the video that he did. It went viral. It makes LeBron, again, like I said, look like a chump. And it's the last couple of lines that did it. And the guy got suspended for it. Check it out.
Dispatch, I've arrived at that disturbance. We have LeBron call my cell phone right away, please. Thank you. Excuse me, sir. Excuse me. No, can you put the knife down, please, sir? Sir, no, 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 sir, don't stab it. No, no, stop stabbing. Stop. Oh, hold on. Hold on, it's LeBron. LeBron, hey, you got me again. Listen, I'm out here at this disturbance call, and there's a guy trying to stab another guy with a knife. What do you think I should do? Why does that matter? Okay, well, they're both black. One guy's trying to stab another guy with a knife. Deadly force is completely justified. Uh-huh. I see. So you don't care if a black person kills another black person, but you do care if a white cop kills a black person, even if he's doing it to save the life of another black person? I mean, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but then again, you are really good at basketball, so I guess I'll take your word for it. All right. Yep. Okay. All right. Thanks, LeBron. Michael Jordan's the GOAT. What? Nothing. I gotta go. Sorry, guys. You're on your own. Good luck.
Michael Jordan's the GOAT. Oh, sorry. I gotta go. Okay. Yeah, you're really good at basketball, so I guess you know what you're talking about in domestic policy. In race relations. So, you know, every time one of these boobs comes up and has something insane to say, like LeBron James does from time to time, and, you know, they just fall in line with this politically correct thinking. This is all Marxism, progressive Marxism. Cultural Marxism. Ah, good golly, Miss Molly. We're going to take a little bit of a break, and we will be back with more of ACP after we figure out what we're going to listen to. Ah. Friday night. I have not done a show on Friday night in a long time. Pretty cool. Ah, here we go. We'll be back with more right after this.
I can get to sleep. I think about the implications of diving in too deep and possibly the complications, especially at night. I worry over situations I know we'll be all right. Perhaps it's just imagination. Day after day it reappears. Night after night my heartbeat shows the fear. Ghosts appear and fade away. Between the sheets only brings exasperation. It's time to walk the streets. Smell the desperation. At least there's pretty lights, though there's little variation. It nullifies the night from overkill. yesterday it reappears. Night after night, my heart beats for show. Back another
Rachel Singers, Lonnie Mack, a twang, and Eddie Hisman ring, we're going steady, take it easy, take me high, lie, lie, house of fire, no commotion, poker, passion, deeper purple satisfaction, baby, baby, gotta, gimme, getting hot, Sammy's cooking, Leslie Gore, Richie Valens, end of story, my beast of Fuji, I'm a Kama Sutra, Rama Lama, Richard Perry, Spectre Barry, Righteous Archer, Nielsen, Harry, shimmy, shimmy, Coco, poppin', fast as back and finger poppin'.
Lamborghini, BB King, and frolicking. Get it on a nice and hearty, clap a lot of hailing hearty.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. that California, that early 70s California pop, man. I love that kind of stuff, that bubblegum music. Nice to be back with you. Moving into the end times here on ACP, a Friday night show, which we haven't done in a long, long time. It was kind of nice to visit the old neighborhood, I guess you could say. Nice to be here. Not dead air, just trying to think about some stuff. More and more, every day. Hold on, I got to hit the mute button. Hang on. And we're back. It's like the bizarro world. When I was a kid, I was like every other kid in the 60s and 70s, man. It was G.I. Joe's, comic books, and junk food, and cartoons, and frisbees, and playing outside all the time. But in the Superman comics, which I wasn't necessarily a fan of, there was this thing called the bizarro world, and bizarro Superman. And in the bizarro world, everything was backwards. Good was bad, right was wrong. And if you look around today, sing out if you think I'm wrong, but more and more in more and more places, it's like the inmates are running the asylum, man. Seriously. And again, Democrats scream and holler and they jump up and down and they look off in the distance with big shiny eyes, the tears welling up, and they dream about this perfect utopian society where, you know, there's no racial invective, everybody gets along and it's all peaceful and prosperous. But they just can't understand that those places already exist, and they're just in places where Democrats aren't in control. Yeah. Because it's been that way for decades in these places. New York City, Detroit. There are sections of Detroit that make Hiroshima look plush. Grand buildings. Magnificent limestone edifices, granite edifices, libraries, museums. Money threw in there by Packard and Ford and Durant and Olds. Democrats have been calling the shots in Detroit for over 60 years. Take a look at it today. Chicago, with the daily killings in that city, millions have probably been killed in the last 20 years. I would bet more than a million people have died in Chicago in the last 20 years from shootings. What de Blasio has done to New York is a crime. What's happened in San Francisco, once a magnificent city, junkies and whores pooping and peeing on the streets, and there's not a damn thing you can do about it. Sidewalks covered in hypodermic needles. Los Angeles. looks more and more like the post-apocalyptic town for the setting of Escape from Los Angeles. Remember Escape from New York? They made a sequel not long after that, Escape from Los Angeles. And yeah, it's what it is. You know, you see these tent cities. It looks like Nigeria, man. It looks like some third world shithole. I don't care. Glenn Beck, and I am an admirer of Glenn Beck. He's a little bit crazy. He is. But if you understood Glenn Beck in his life, you would understand why. I'm still an admirer of Glenn Beck because of all the things. You know, he overcome alcoholism, drug addiction. It cost him a lot. His mother died of an overdose, I think, like around Christmas time when he was 12 or 13 years old. The dude has been through it. And I also find him to be at times a remarkably astute political mind. Has he made mistakes and missteps? Yeah, and I don't even get into that. But in this, you know, Glenn used to talk repeatedly during the Obama years. About the country was at some point due to all these pressures, domestic and foreign, primarily domestic, these cultural pressures and these aberrant, abhorrent as well, leftist policies that they want to put in place. Again, inmates running the asylum. But Glenn said that there was going to come a point at some time we were going to reach a point of critical mass where all these different forces were going to come to bear. Unemployment, social entitlements, illegal immigration, illegal aliens, racial division, incitement to racial violence, incitement to political violence. And all these forces, all these different catalysts, were going to come together. And when they did come together, well, of course, one way or another, there you have the fate of the nation. Not dead air, I'm just thinking about it all. I worry about the violence. Honest to God, I do. I worry about the violence. I know a little bit about it. It's not cool at all. Sadly, however, it's necessary, and when used in the requisite amount, can be pretty effective at de-escalating situations quickly without anybody getting hurt worse. I don't know that that's what's going to happen here, and it bothers me. I don't know that so much of that will happen where I live. And but again, when you look at these Democrat enclaves, this stuff's been, it's been bubbling over for years now. And people like Joe Biden and Barack Obama and Bill and Hillary Clinton and all the people that support, you know, Van Jones, Cornel West, all these nutbags out there that support Antifa and BLM and this violent Marxist revolution. I am afraid that when the time actually comes for action, deliberate action, the cops aren't going to be able to do it. And I'm not saying that as any reflection on law enforcement officers. I'm saying that on based on my observance of political power, you know, no one has the political will to stop Antifa or BLM because they have a use for these guys. The progressive and the cultural Marxists, these are their foot soldiers. The Nazis had the Sturmabteilung and the Schutzstaffel. The Democrats have BLM and Antifa. Some point, sometime, good people, people that love their families, people that love their communities, their towns, they're going to say enough and they're going to strap. And when you get enough of those guys who love their families, who love their communities, who love their cities and towns, when they get strapped, you better watch. Because these cats know what to do, the vast measure of them. And again, I do not advocate violence. I do not, absolutely not. But I fear... there, you know, we've already seen it. We've seen violence, you know, for 6-8 years now through the last part of Obama's administration with BLM, with Occupy Wall Street. You remember those guys? Occupy Wall Street? Rapes and murders going on in their occupied zones. No different than Chaz out in Oregon. And I'm not really, you know, if it, and again, I do not advocate violence. But in the end, if it does come to that, I'm pretty sure about the outcome. I'm not too worried about the outcome. But the problem is, what happens in the aftermath? Let's say. And again, I do not advocate violence, but let us say that it comes to it. And that these good men and women that I was telling you about, that love their families, that love their communities, love their towns and their cities, love their way of life, say no more. And it goes down. It'll be tough, okay? It'll be tough. And a lot of people will get hurt. There will be losses. There will be losses on both sides. But after it's all over, and hopefully right has prevailed, what happens to the vanquished? What do we do with these people? Remember, and make no mistake, I don't care what kind of euphemistic terms they use or what kind of academically acceptable nomenclature they want to throw out on you there. The leaders of these movements are actively looking to overthrow the government of the United States. Of course, now, they have a complicit government. You know, Biden's on their side. He's their guy. But when the rest of us, when the normal people are running things, these guys are actively seeking to overthrow the government of the United States, to disrupt the infrastructure of our way of life. I love you, Mark. Take good care. So after all that's done, and orders such as it may be, or whatever that is restored, what happens? I mean, there are people who were sympathetic to these groups throughout every level of government, the bureaucracies, throughout the prosecuting attorney's offices, throughout the judges' benches. What happens do we round them all up like we did the Nazis? Do we decide who's needed to run the government and who isn't? I mean, I really don't know. These, to me, and they're not questions that I think a lot of people have thought through. A lot of people take it up to civil war. You know, you hear that, oh, there's going to be another civil war. Civil war is going to be a civil war. There's going to be another civil war between the Marxists, the, you know, the liberals, the right and the left. And maybe there will be. I don't know. Again, I do not advocate violence. And everybody thinks about that up until the point to where it comes to pulling triggers. But what happens after? I don't know. Something to think about anyway. And you know what? We got about 4 minutes left. I'm about out of gas. And I've had a terrific time tonight. This has been a lot of fun. Like I said, Friday night show, I haven't done one in a long time. And it was... kind of nice in a way to take a little trip down memory lane. We ordinarily do it Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here at Blog Talk Radio on Patriot Nation Radio. I have a recorded version of the program that goes out on the Mojo 50 Radio Network, mojo50.com. If you're not listening, you ought to be. Some of the very best in conservative and libertarian talk radio out there, mojo50.com. And also I'm going to talk about our friend Gary Benford's program, United Patriots Uprising, every other Monday, which I think means this Monday. Well, he'll be on, and I'm looking forward to that. Gary's knocking it out of the park. He has since he stepped up to the microphone. Very, very proud to be involved with that program. It's going to be something. Keep your eye on this guy because he's really good at it. That's about all the time we got. I think we're just going to go ahead and shut it down here. We'll be back on Tuesday. Lord willing, and the river don't rise. Taking a look at things as we do through a conservative's perspective. In the meantime, God bless you. God bless America. We'll see you then.